Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Movie Geeks United, the perfect way to start your week, Sunday night episode. Hey, Jerry, how are you?
I'm doing good. I guess it is the perfect way to start the week, man. That's a good idea. We never did that before. That's awesome.
Yeah, every show, like, you know how they have, like, their Friday night, Friday afternoon, they play these, like, work songs on popular stations, like everybody's working for the weekend and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We should start our own trend like that Sunday night.
I think we should. I think that's a great idea. That's awesome.
Get people excited and ready for their work week.
Yeah, I know, really. Yeah, everyone just go get wasted right now.
Take this job and shove it. Something like that we need to play. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Movie Geeks United. We're going to be paying tribute to some of the great performances and films of Gene Hackman a little bit later, kind of an informal roundtable. During which, you know, all of our listeners are welcome to call in and give their input as well, and I'm sure we'll hear from some of our regulars. But this first hour, we're going to talk some movie news and stuff, and Wednesday night is going to be exciting, Jerry.
I know. We're doing film scores. Let me ask you this. Is this because you got a lot of film scores over the last couple of weeks?
Yes.
I was wondering what the impetus was. All right.
It's all about me. I mean, it's
just selfish. No, that's fine.
Selfish.
I mean, God knows I ripped a whole bunch of stuff on my computer today to send you, so.
Good. So we're going to play, like, wall-to-wall film scores and talk film scoring, and we're also going to premiere the new Iron Man 2 theme a month before it's available in stores.
Oh, that's not, even though the film comes out this...
I know. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
The soundtrack doesn't come out until June 7th.
Wow. We'll keep them hungry.
Well, because they have to get the consumer salivating for it. So it's that.
I know.
Just
yeah.
That
no.
Month.
No. You're right. No, but they have the I guess the AC/DC soundtrack is available though this week though, right?
Oh, probably.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
AC/DC is always available. I've heard. Just contact them for your local XYZ liquor engagement or something.
No, they're they're still going strong. I thought this was a good idea.
I know.
Idea.
I'm sorry.
No. This is a good idea to have them on the whole soundtrack with them. I think it was a great tie-in.
Yeah, it is, and it gives the movie like an automatic identity. I know a whole bunch of people in a new generation hear that music and they think Iron Man now.
That's true. Very true.
Yeah. And they used to think Iron Maiden, so it's different. Okay, I wanted to start out the show. By illuminating our listeners about something very exciting that's happened to Movie Geeks United last week.
Mm-hmm.
We entered the classroom.
Now, is that a wise thing? I mean...
Was that a wise thing?
No, a wise thing with three of us. I mean, now for you, definitely, but for me and Chris, I mean, you brought us into the classroom too, I guess, right? Or
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Dear
God. I have exposed the children of America to all of us here on the show.
Oh, God.
Because I think that people listening, they said this would be great if we could target the youth of America with this show. This would mean so much to the children of America.
I've got to hear. All right, this I've
so,
got
so
to
we're
hear.
Taking it one school at a time. Actually, it was a great time. And one of my very best friends for the past 17 years, we've been friends longer than the average age of the kids in this classroom. He teaches TV film production at this really prestigious program at a local high school here where I live, and it's prestigious because of the work that he does there. He's a great, fantastic filmmaker himself, and he's actually working on a feature film right now, so we're going to hear about that too. But I wanted to bring him on to talk a little bit about the experience of having me actually relate to children.
I've got to hear this.
All right, this is my buddy Rick Jansen. Rick, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, bud. All right, so you and I have known each other. This is your first time on the show. Don't be nervous.
Yeah. I am.
There's no reason to. If I'm on the show every week for like 3 years, there's no, you have nothing to be nervous about, all right? Be yourself.
You and I have been friends for a long time, and you've been teaching what for maybe, has it been 10 years yet? Has it been 10 years that you've been teaching?
Actually, 15 years, yeah.
Okay, so I'm only 5 years off. but tell me about your class, because when you and I were going to high school, these kinds of opportunities weren't there for kids, and now, you know, elementary schools have, you know, production classes and stuff like that. So tell me about your class in particular, your program.
Well, I teach high school television production, and we make a daily news show. Some of them are pretty good, some of them are pretty rough. The students have a good time. We also make documentaries and short films and music videos, things like that. So some of my students get real into the short film side of it. And so I thought, well, I don't know why I've never had Jamie come talk to him, but I figured that would be a good idea. Mm-hmm. And he did, and he did a great job.
All right, well, let's talk more about that.
I don't doubt that at all, but before we get into Jamie's public school debut as a professional, when did you start teaching these kind of classes? Because we had nothing like this. I mean, I went to public school in the 80s, and we had nothing like this. I mean, this is a really great, I think it's an awesome thing. I mean, it's a beautiful thing for students.
I didn't have anything like that either, so it's pretty nice. I think it's impressive, really, with what we've been able to do over the last 15 plus years. Well, they had already gotten the program going by the time I got involved, but I kind of got involved, honestly, by a friend who was like, "Look, you should be teaching," and I thought, "Oh, you're crazy," and but he was like, "He's like, no, seriously," so I got brave enough. I put in a resume. I got called for an interview, I got hired, and I had to take 16 hours of additional college courses to get my certificate, but it was worth it. I've been doing it for a while, and I've had a great time with the kids.
Well, that's great.
We've won a lot of awards. I mean, we've won local awards, national awards. We actually also won an Emmy back in 2006, and we got a free trip to New York for a documentary we made.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
and you guys have like really made your mark in the short film arena too.
my favorite part of it is the short film. So I put a lot of effort in that, and I think that's where I'm most excited about it. So I think the kids see that, and they can get excited too. So we're pretty known for our short films.
Well, I have no idea what kids are like in general these days, but walking into the classroom and speaking to the kids, I mean, they were all very respectful and responsive. They were great kids, and it became obvious right away that there were probably four major movie geeks. I mean, like mini versions of the three of us. In the classroom, and I was astounded by the intelligence and the insight of the questions that they asked. I mean, it was fantastic.
I know. They were very engaged with you. They were excited to talk to you, and I saw you kind of laughing. And I was kind of sitting in the back like a proud parent because, they are very they are very excited about it, and it's cool to know that. Mm-hmm. We they're teenagers, but we can still communicate with them because we still have same interests and stuff.
Yeah, we have the same interests, and we were there at one time, so we understand. Not that long ago. We understand.
But Jerry, one of these kids spoke to me and said, You know,
why do you have
really
a retard on your show? No.
No, this was later on in the
oh, okay,
session.
Okay.
And they said, man, I love David Lynch. He's one of the great directors. But since he did Inland Empire and this digital video stuff, he's really gone downhill. And I was like, oh my, this kid's in my brain. He's expressing the same thoughts that I have myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking about most of them loved Fincher. Fincher
right.
was the big favorite among them. And so we talked a lot about Seven. They listened to our Seven podcast.
Oh, great.
Talked about Fincher's resume and Scorsese, and we talked about 3D and why this type of movie is getting made today, or movies going to die off. You know, it was a wide ranging. They asked about Uwe Boll. I mean, it was
everyone
was all over
about Uwe Boll.
So the impression that you got, Rick, was that the children...
the children.
aren't I creepy when I say that? That the children... absolutely loved me. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. No, they were very excited. Actually, they were wondering if you were going to start teaching in the future, you know, at some
No, but it sounds like this is a rousing success, though. So, I mean, I would hope that Jamie will be invited back.
Yeah.
You know what?
Well,
it honestly was. Jamie did a really good job. They were very engaged throughout the whole period. Jamie was obviously knowledgeable about what he's talking about. They asked him his opinions about where the industry's going, and he, you know, was able to get his opinion, you know, very clearly, intelligently. I mean, of course. But, they had a good time.
That's great. This is awesome.
Well,
I'm gonna start a
bus tour soon. I'm just gonna go to all these different the Jamie Magical Bus Tour. But they asked me something like, they said, one of them said something like, they named Scorsese and Spielberg and all these directors. Who do you think is going to pick up the baton and kind of carry that legacy into the future, like the next big director? And I punched myself because later on I thought the obvious answer, and I couldn't come up with it, was Chris Nolan. I mean, you know.
I think with the news this week, I think that's definitely one of the main contenders, without a doubt.
So let's talk about your film for a little bit,
because
we're going to have you back on when it's finished. But you're actually in post on a feature that you just directed, right?
Yes. I guess the most interesting thing about that is that my entire crew is made up of former students from my first year at the high school. So, we finally did it. We shot it in South Carolina over a period of 13 days, and we're still in post production. Since it's not our full time job, we're having to edit in our spare time, but we're still working on it.
Let me ask you this, though, because it's not your full-time job. How do you get – I mean, there's some days you're – are you eager to work on it every day, or are there some days you're, like, exhausted from, what you're doing during the day? I mean, how does it work? Because what a lot of people don't seem to realize is a lot of people think, when you say, oh, you're a filmmaker – you know, for a majority of filmmakers, the filmmaking is the second job. There is a first job that actually pays the bills, and then there's the second job that, you know, the dream job, the job that you want. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. So how do you balance that?
I think I'm, pretty excited about having it, about finishing it soon anyway. So that
right.
gives me energy. It's tiring. I won't lie. I mean, there's definitely
right.
days where I'm like, wow, I don't really want to go work on the movie today. But, we've been able to balance it pretty well between work and the film. And I'm with, a couple guys that are, they were students at one point, but now they're, among my best of friends. So, we're having a good time, and
that's
I think
great.
they give a lot of energy towards it as well. And sometimes what's interesting is even when I'm kind of, because as a filmmaker you have your ups and downs. Even when I'm kind of like, oh, geez, they're raring to go, so that helps.
That's great.
And it's called Lamp Post Lane.
Yeah.
And you categorize it as a thriller?
Yeah, it's kind of a mystery thriller. We made a short for a film festival in St. Pete a couple years ago, and the short is on YouTube, actually. But we, after we did it, they played it on a theater screen, and it played pretty well. It got a pretty good reaction. And we were like, you know, this could be made into a feature pretty cheap, and cheap being the key word. So we were like, okay, let's develop it. And so we did, and so now we're in post-production. So
you have a website already set up. Give our listeners a website.
It's just kind of a little movie, but the website is lamppostlanemovie.com, and it's all it is just a little production diary of the shooting, and we update it periodically. But it, you know, trust me, very little movie made by a bunch of people, like Jerry said, that wish that was their full time job to make
movies.
Don't
sell yourself short.
Yeah, but that's about passion, man.
Don't sell yourself
the good
short.
Stuff.
This is what you're working for, so please don't do that. It's very important. It's not just a little film. It's something that you put all of your energies into. So don't ever sell that short. Never like say it's just that it's because it is. It's like it's your baby, you know. So
yeah,
I'm putting it in the chat room.
Oh, good, thank you.
Okay, that's always been my weakness as a filmmaker. You know, I'm not a great salesman. I feel like I'm a decent filmmaker, but I've never been a good salesman. So that's my.
We talk about that all the time on the show. Like usually the best filmmakers are. I mean, that's really something that they struggle with is the salesman part of it. It's just a different part of your brain that, you know, from the creative. And
yeah.
I prefer creative people. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're not MBAs. So. and that's something, and it is, and if that person, though, there are people that have both of those instincts and more power to them, but it's like, Jamie's right, we prefer the creative over the MBA. We've actually dealt with some people on the show early on that were like that. I'm not going to name names or anything, and I actually do remember the names.
I'll name names. If I remembered the names, I would name them.
Yeah, but if you don't remember the names, thank God. But, you know, it is the heart that speaks louder on the show than anything else.
You want to join us for movie news a little bit, dude?
Yeah, come on. Join us, dude. Stick around, please.
Sure.
Please.
Okay.
Sure.
I have no idea what Jamie's going to talk about. Join us.
Hey, the weekend box office. Nightmare on Elm Street. I guess everybody knew that this would be number one. It was number one at $32 million.
Yeah.
It's been a big hit, like a record breaker, I think, for this time of year for horror.
Did you see it? Did you see it, Jerry?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Because I did. I don't know what to say about it. I can't. Jackie O'Hurley wants to just be typecast as a pedophile.
Yes.
No, and I'm serious. We talked about this last week, and I like.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm not a purist. I'm not a purist about most films, but I honestly, you know, I could take or leave it. I had very mixed feelings about it. I thought it did some things well, but other things. It's just, I think I read today that Wes Craven wanted nothing to do with it, so I think that says.
And
something.
If Wes Craven wants nothing to do with it,
yeah,
that
I mean,
really
it's
speaks
gotta
volumes.
Really be read, kid. You know, if Wes, it's gotta really, it's gonna be like, wait, I don't really want anything to do with this. But it's,
yeah.
It's you watch it. I don't remember. I haven't seen the original one in a long time. But there's just some things in it. You just like roll your eyes a lot, and you know you gotta. I mean, you want to give Jackie Earle props and everything. You want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but you're just like, you really just is this what you wanted to do with the comeback?
Yeah.
This is no, and I don't mean that in a film snobbish way at all because I liked him in Watchmen and obviously Little Children. But I think this is really you signed on for two more of these.
Well, I don't want to be insensitive. I think Jackie Earle Haley is great, and I when he came out in Little Children, I was really uplifted that he got back in the game. It's a great story.
Yeah.
But look at Jackie Earle Haley. I mean, how much is he going to do? I mean, what kind of material is he going to do?
And I got to say something. There is I don't remember the original that well. There is a flashback sequence with without all the makeup and everything. Right. And we talked about this with Halloween a couple.
And he looks better with the makeup. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not. No, but that first half of the Rob Zombie's Halloween works very well with that backstory. Did you need it? Probably not. I noticed they're really trying with all these films. They're trying to make them ultra, ultra serious.
Yeah.
I don't know if it worked. I don't know if Nightmare on Elm Street needed it or not. Like I say, I'm not a purist, so there's a lot of people that we know who listen to the show who are up in arms about this film. Really hate it. I can't get that worked up about it.
I'm pretty apathetic about it. I mean,
I know you are, but I'm just saying, it's just like I could take or leave it. You know, at the end of the day, it's just some, you know, it is what it is. It's Platinum Dooms wants to cash in on a name. The studio wants to, you know, sell as many DVDs of the old films as possible, reissues or whatever you want to call them. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. So, Rick, you feel the same way. You're apathetic, right?
Yeah, I'll probably see it down the road, but I wasn't going to rush out and see it. Yeah, and actually from the students listening to them talk, they were kind of, you know, like, kind of neutral on it as well. So I don't know. It'll probably have a 50% box office drop next weekend.
I would think next weekend you have Iron Man 2 opening up. Forget it. I mean, you're just really, and that's something I am looking forward to seeing. I think I was actually watching the extras on the Blu-ray of the first one yesterday, and it just looks, that's a fun film. I'm not really, I'm not going to lie to you, a lot of these 80s slasher films, I was never crazy about to begin with. It's just not my thing. It was never my thing growing up. I mean, there are obviously films like the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre or something that I thought were very well done. But there are other things I got to be honest, I just can't get worked up over. I just can't. It's not my thing, like I said. I know I'm beginning
but
to sound
But you struck on something, that you struck on something, though, about these horror movies that they're remaking. And those horror movies in the 80s, I mean, the Nightmare on Elm Street films became more and more campy.
Mm-hmm.
And Friday the 13th became more and more campy.
Mm-hmm.
Campy Crystal Lake, actually.
Yeah.
But and the movies, the horror movies that they're making today are more really a lot darker and just dismal.
Greer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they're depressing.
It's hard. Here's the thing. Look, we had a great conversation about reboots last week, and Chris called me out on a couple of things, and he is absolutely right to call me out on, because there's some things we prefer in one genre that I don't prefer in another genre, and he has every right to call me out. It's the best version of mixed doubles I've ever seen, actually. But like I said, it worked. The problem with Halloween is Rob Zombie made Halloween 2. That's the big problem, I think. You make the sequel, and some people are now rushing to defend the sequel, and that's fine if they see something.
I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that wave of reassessment.
Yeah, and that's fine, Amy. If they can sit through it again, I sat through it once, and I was just like, you went through all this trouble to really reimagine this and really put some, you know, create some characters that you cared about. And volume 2 rolls around, and I don't care about them anymore.
it had nothing. I mean, it had nothing. No pull at all. No interest at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Zombie wasn't even
interested. Commentary?
I listened Halloween
to the commentary. On Halloween 2? Yes. And Rob Zombie's just like, this day was horrible. I hated it. This was the worst day. Every scene, it became kind of comical, his commentary did.
Wait, were this for the second film?
Yes. Yeah, because
I would be curious to hear that. I mean,
it's comical.
But it looks like, it just looks like from the film he could care less. I mean, he was just like, all right, let's just keep the camera rolling. I don't care anymore.
I think he was not able to do a lot of things he wanted to do for whatever reason. I know they had some problems along the way, but it's the commentary was definitely funny. My daughter walked through the room and actually started laughing after just listening to it for 2 minutes. So
I could tell he didn't want to promote it, because we almost got him for the first Halloween. We almost got him, and the second Halloween it was like, no, he doesn't want to talk to anybody about it. And then I saw him on Howard Stern, and he said, I don't want to talk about the movie. And this was a couple of days before it opened. He said, let's talk about anything but the movie.
Yeah, and And what I was talking about when we were talking about the promotion, you know, remember Dimension, the Weinsteins wanted to really promote, I mean, at least the beginning of the summer, they were gung-ho about promoting Halloween 2 over Inglourious Basterds because Inglourious Basterds got a very mixed reception at Cannes. And they were really, you know, that was where they really wanted to put their money. And I think Universal decided, no, we want to really, you know, you should really work on Inglourious Basterds because you don't have anything else.
There's something interesting that Dean is bringing up in the chat room.
Mm-hmm.
Dean is always trying to get under my skin, questioning everything I say. That's just fine.
That's very good, yeah. I mean, he does it to me all the time, too. I mean,
when we're talking about horror should be scary and fun, that's what James said. And that's true. When I'm talking about the horror movies of today being depressing, I mean, they're depressing in a way that early 70s horror was. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Like Chainsaw or Last House on the Left, I mean, those weren't happy, fun movies. Those weren't the campy horror movies that you saw in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, I don't know what that says about our needs or where we are this decade when these horror movies are being made as opposed
right.
to 20 years earlier when they were a different tone. That's what I'm curious about.
I think it's that. I think it also, I think 9/11 plays into that somewhere along the line or did early on, like especially with The House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects. Well, The Devil's Rejects isn't really a horror film. It's more of a like a revenge thriller type film. But these, a lot of these films, like the Hostel films, especially the Saw films, they do, they are, and let's just give David Edelstein his due here, the torture porn. You know, he coined the term to him. I don't want to. I like David Edelstein. I don't know if I still agree with it.
But I think that there's something to that. I don't think that they logically say, okay, we're going to make these movies or go to these movies in response to the world after 9/11. I don't think it's that on the nose. But I think that is something that's something in the culture that drives people to want those kinds of movies.
Mm-hmm. It's like reality television. In some ways, you know, like all these reality shows in the last 15 years that have really taken the television world, people love to watch them, regardless of what the subject matter is. There are some shows that have just...
They just want to see people humiliated.
Yeah, I mean, you just summed it all up. There is something, it's like this, it's not me that's being humiliated, so okay, that's great, you know. So I think you hit it right on the nose.
Yeah. Second place this weekend was the only children's movie whose title does not have to change for the porn version, How to Train Your Dragon. Sorry. We really don't have anything to say about that, right? It's a great, I mean, a $200 million grosser already in, like, what 3 weeks or a month or something?
But it's been a month, but, I mean, there's that.
Yeah, a month.
And more than a month, actually, maybe a little over a month. I mean, is this an Alice in Wonderland that have really just cleaned up?
Yeah, the first quarter of the year. Yep,
yeah.
Yep. And I'm sure, unlike Alice in Wonderland, the How to Train Your Dragon is actually a good film, so it would be deserving of it. Sorry. The nation's second largest video chain, movie gallery, is completely closed. They're closing all 2,415 of their stores. Movie gallery no more.
Wow.
So, will Blockbuster be next?
Probably.
Maybe.
Is the video store obsolete? I mean, 2 years from now, is it going to be obsolete?
It could be.
Maybe.
I think in a couple of years, then maybe even the idea of getting disc mailed to you like Netflix will be, it will just all be via your Blu-ray player that you have at home or whatever, or the computer. I mean, and which is sad because I like to go to places and browse, you know. You like to go to places and look around. I mean,
Well, there's always Walmart. I mean, there's always Walmart.
That's
you'll always find Mannequin on the Move for $3.99 at Walmart.
Jamie, you hate to go to Walmart. What are you talking about?
Oh, my. Here we go.
It is interesting, though, and it'll be interesting what happens to Netflix and the other people that try to infringe upon Netflix's their territory.
Because what about the Redbox?
The Redbox is fantastic. I mean, I think it's all about convenience.
Redbox is a big
deal.
That's an important thing. You're at the grocery store, boom, hey, let's get a movie for tonight, you know? That's a big convenience right there. That's the epitome of impulse right there.
Yeah. I just don't know for sure if it's a bad thing. I mean, I think that everything changes and kind of morphs, and so I don't know if it's a bad thing. People are still going to the movies. I mean, they're not going to the movies to see the best movies, but
they're going, and
yeah.
I mean, let's put it like, I mean, let's, you know, what I'll get nervous about if Landmark closes, then that's like where you would become nervous, because if a major art house chain like that goes under,
yeah,
that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's got, because the promise of the multiplexes, and Rick, I mean, you and I know this very well since when we first met, we started in that industry. The promise of the multiplexes was we'd get different stuff. I mean, more choice, but that never happened.
Right.
What we got was five more screens of Jurassic Park and the big event movies. We didn't get more movies.
No.
We got more
yeah.
of the same.
Exactly.
That's true. You're going to get, like, at that theater, you'll probably get, like, five or six screens of Iron Man 2 next weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, no doubt.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be everywhere.
You're going to get that, and the next weekend you're going to get, like, you know, three or four of Robin Hood, and I think, what is it, the Letters to Juliet movie, and, you know, it's going to get into them when the next weekend, Shrek, you know, that's the way it's been, sadly, since the multiplex. It never did get to the point where you would get the little, like, Hal Hartley movie. You were never going to get the Hal Hartley movie. Who am I kidding? But you were never, you know, even a Woody Allen film, and, you know, it's only until recently that Woody Allen has
yeah.
been in a lot of theaters. Remember, there are some films in the 90s that he would make that did not get that wide release. It's a sad state of affairs in that way, because, as you said, you're not getting with a multiplex, it's anything but multi.
I don't mind there being outlets for smaller films. The outlets for smaller films to be seen being home viewing. That's fine. But the more options that are eliminated in terms of that, Netflix or any video stores or anything like that, the more depressing it gets, because I don't want that genre of movie to be relegated to only being seen online. I don't
yeah.
like that idea.
I don't either, not at all. I agree.
I'm happy, though. I am happy that at least still, like, the new Nicole Halsner film, Please Give, has opened up
yeah.
to good reviews, and that in July we'll get the new Lisa Cholodenko film, The Kids Are All Right. But,
right.
And these are important films I'm talking about.
But you know where those cut their teeth. That's another thing. The film festival circuit.
Yeah.
That's why
yeah.
that is so valuable. Yeah.
And
I was almost
going to
say that.
Yeah, Fox Searchlight usually or a boutique like that picks them up for distribution, so they're going
right.
to get a couple hundred screens.
Speaking of wide release, Roman Polanski came out with a statement
to Bernard Henry Levy via text today.
Oh, did he? Is that what it was?
I think it was a text to the French philosopher Bernard Henry Levy, and he does not want to come back here. He's not even.
No.
He has no interest. I don't blame him. I mean,
he says the only reason why they want to bring him back is to kind of crucify him in the media, to like drag him out like a piece of meat to the media. To which I say, give us a call. We'd love to have an interview with you.
Yeah, and not only that. I mean, oh, God.
You know, he's heard our tribute show, man.
He has.
He has. It was verified through his assistant. He heard it.
Okay, that's great. That's wonderful.
I think he owes us. I mean, that was a tough week for us to do a tribute
that
show.
That was a very tough week. But having said that, I mean, I don't think he's going to do everything he can not to come back here.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because he made one of the – his last movie, I think, is one of the best movies he's made in a very long time.
I think so.
And
but
it's not getting the recognition it deserves. I mean, I know it's not going to – commercially not, but it really is just one of these incredible films. And, the scandal – the scandal
yeah.
and the gossip drowns out the creative in this one.
And I don't know. I mean, we're in a tough spot as movie fans that want to talk about his movies, because I understand the fury over what he did in his personal life. But
right.
but I, it's difficult to come across with, yes, but I just want to focus on his work as a filmmaker.
Right.
And it's hard not to make that seem insensitive about this other thing that he's going
through. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting a call. Hang on.
Probably Dean or Roland.
Okay. It's a salesperson. All right. Hey, the big news this week was actually, I can't bring it up on screen, but it was the Batman 3, Chris Nolan's third Batman,
mm-hmm.
got a release date, something like July 20th, 2012.
That's right, before yep. Just right in time before the apocalypse. So,
yeah.
So, if you believe
according
that.
According to the Mayans.
Yeah, according to the Mayans, we're going to get to at least see Batman before we all go out
right.
and bang.
And we'll also see the next Star Trek movie before then, too.
So we'll see Star Trek, we'll see Spider-Man, we've got it all covered before December. We'll all die with big smiles on our faces,
yeah.
or big.
Which fits, face. because Nolan said, I'll make another Batman when hell freezes over. So he's keeping
now,
on schedule.
You know, this is good news. It's good news to everyone involved. Well, you know, if he's coming back, that's a great sign. How they're going to top, you know, it's really funny. They're not even considering it a sequel, really. They're considering it really a sequel to which it is to The Dark Knight, but no one's even talking about Batman Begins, which is a great film, too. But everyone's saying this will be like the equivalent of The Godfather 2 or something, or The Empire Strikes Back, and, you know.
And there was a first movie there,
yeah.
but they're ignoring.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that first movie, too. So, I mean...
Yeah.
Me, too.
So, Rick, you actually met Chris Nolan.
Yeah, he was really nice. Yeah, I just talked to him briefly, but, you know, I was telling him how much I loved his work, which, you know, it's true. I mean, he's a great filmmaker. But, yeah, he was nice.
And Inception, that's going to be the movie to see this summer, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So it's going after, I mean, that's a big summer. I mean,
yeah,
with all those
summer. I mean,
all those sequels.
Mm-hmm, but that's the one that, I mean, well, and don't get me wrong, I'm definitely looking forward to the next Star Trek, and, you know, I don't know what to make of the Spider-Man reboot, but
I don't either.
Batman is the big...
Yeah, that'll be the big one.
The big
I mean,
one.
Yeah.
Any
movie that goes against that, it does so at its peril.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I don't know if they're going to shoot IMAX, if they're going to shoot 3D. I mean, I don't know. Nolan looked into 3D for Inception, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, he's not, from what I read, not real interested in 3D, but I think they do like the IMAX format, and I know they're curious about shooting an entire film in the IMAX format, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know how feasible that is. So
we'll see
what he decides to do. I guess
he shot about 5 or 6 scenes of Dark Knight in IMAX, didn't he?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah, and they look great. Yeah, but in the entire movie, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's the question. Is you know, he, I guess that's what he's trying to decide. Is it, could we do an entire movie in IMAX? I don't know.
Yeah, it does seem a little bulky. I guess maybe he's thinking it's a little.
Yeah.
Inconvenient, the size
yeah.
of that camera.
Right.
Yeah.
So who's excited about Piranha 3D?
Actually, Jamie, I saw the trailer for the first time this weekend, and I thought it was very funny. I mean, I'm actually looking forward to seeing it just to see what they do with it. I mean, I didn't know Richard Dreyfuss was making a cameo in it either. It looks funny.
Yeah, Richard Dreyfuss. And when we talked to Elizabeth Shue a couple weeks ago, she actually talked about being excited about it. Because she's
yes,
in it.
Yeah, she's in it. Who else is in it besides...
And who doesn't want to see her in 3D?
Christopher Lloyd.
Oh,
Christopher Lloyd's in it. Yeah. That looks funny.
Yeah, they showed the trailer the other day in the theater. It said coming April 16th. I was like, hey, guys, you know, that was last 2 weeks ago. So I think it's the end of the summer, actually, that's going to come out.
In August?
Yeah, I think it's at August, yeah.
Yeah.
That seems like a good August release, actually.
Yeah, I mean... I you know, the original is all right. You
put
know,
your brain on hold from all these really intelligent summer movies. Go see Piranha 3D.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there you go.
Oh, gosh. The Coen brothers have started shooting True Grit, which is like one of the most anticipated movies for me, I know, this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it will be. I'm very curious to see what that's like. That's not 3D, is it?
No,
I don't think so.
Tree of Life isn't in 3D, is it?
No.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah, let's think of the most mundane movie to put in 3D. That would be a fun game to play. anything by Hal Hartley. Hal Hartley.
Hal Hartley in 3D. There you go.
Oh man. What else is going on? Do you know of anything else, Jerry or Rick or any?
Well,
I'm looking
now. Like, Universal like just destroyed their release schedule for this year and next year. They switched it around massively, and I'm not sure whether it was for the Kevin James movie, The Zookeeper, or for a Zac Efron movie, Charlie St. Cloud, I think it is. But they really switched around their, I mean, the Adjustment Bureau with Matt Damon and Emily Blunt, which is based on a Philip K. Dick story, was supposed to come out, I think, in the summer. They moved that, they pushed that back to September. So September has all of a sudden become, which used to be a dead month. You have Wall Street 2, the Adjustment Bureau, you have the Clooney movie.
Is that the Assassin movie?
The American, directed by the guy, I believe, who did Control.
Right.
And so they just like basically switched around their whole entire release schedule, and I think it has to do with this Kevin James movie, The Zookeeper, which has tested really well. So I guess they expect another Paul Blart, which, as you said a couple months ago, if you like Paul Blart, chances are you're probably not a good friend of mine.
Actually what I said, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those great, you know.
Yeah, if you like Paul Blart, chances are I don't have any interest in knowing you.
Yeah, oh, and so that was some not big major news, but enough that, wow, you really wanted to do this to your release schedule. Okay, sure. I mean, you know.
Well, those movies are, I would think, in terms of return on investment, Paul Blart was like a phenomenon.
It was great. Yeah,
Kevin
James
probably got the greatest. He has a retirement portfolio like no one else right now.
Right. Those movies can't cost anything to make.
Yeah, I mean, that really caught everyone by surprise and did incredibly well. So they expect.
I mean, you got craft services right there in the Food Mart.
No, but you got that. But, you know, you have this other movie that comes out with him and Adam Sandler and Chris Rock this summer, Grown Ups, and.
Right.
I don't know. But, so it was just that was one of the stories this week I was following. But, yeah, Batman is the big story of the week, the release date for the third Batman story. That's the big one.
Yeah. I'm excited. I'm sorry, I'm eating a candy bar. Sorry.
I was wondering what that was.
I'm excited because the killer inside me is going to be on demand soon.
Oh, really?
Like,
that's good.
Yeah, very soon. They screened it again at Tribeca.
How did that go?
Well, I think that the New York audience was a little bit more tolerant of it than the Sundance audience was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, none of the stars walked out of it offended. Nobody called the director, you know, a misogynistic pig and ran out. But it's really strong stuff. And I don't know. I mean, it's going to be on demand, so it's not going to be available wide. So I think all the fury about this movie is leading up to its release, trying to get ink for it, kind of like Antichrist. I mean, Antichrist didn't really make a dent because nobody had an opportunity to see it.
Yeah, I didn't see it until it came out. Netflix had it on their instant queue. I didn't really get to see it. So,
did you check out Antichrist, Rick?
No, I actually haven't seen it at all, no.
Yeah, don't bother.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Well, I am curious about The Killer Inside Me. Having seen the original and having read the book decades ago, I am curious to see this one. So we'll be on demand. I hope my cable provider will actually show it. But
yeah, I think IFC bought it for on demand.
Oh, great.
That was
okay.
An interesting segue from Paul Blart, though, I got to say.
Yeah, Paul Blart, The Killer Inside Me. Dude, that's
I was trying to think of the only thing more offensive than Paul Blart.
Yeah, Paul Blart is so clean, you know, and then,
yeah.
And then you go to that.
Kevin James will be in the remake of The Killer Inside Me.
Yes, yes.
Paul Blart Inside Me.
Paul Blart Inside Me. That's great. But the big, I mean, the big controversy about this movie is the apparent beating to death of women. People seem to have a problem with that.
I have a problem with that. I mean, it's... Listen to you, Jamie. If you're teaching our children these days...
Yeah, yeah. And this isn't expected from somebody like Michael Winterbottom. I mean, when I think Michael Winterbottom, I don't think, man, really, really gritty, controversial stuff. Am I wrong?
But he has made gritty, not that kind of controversy, but I think The Road to Guantanamo, the movie Nine Songs, while not gritty in that way, gritty in a more sexual way, but no, The Killer Inside Me is actually a different kind of controversy for him.
Okay.
But it does make sense that he would go this route just looking at his career over the last several years. I mean, and he does, it's a natural for him. Does it need to be remade? I mean, I remember finally got to watch the original earlier this year with Stacy Keach, and for its time, that's a brutal movie. But
right.
I now know that this new one, though, makes that look like, you know, something the Vienna Boys choir shot. You know, it's not... I mean, it's going to be... I mean, from all accounts, it sounds...
And by the way, I can't wait to see that movie, The Vienna Boys Choir Shot. I think that'll be great.
Yeah, that's a shot at all. Catholic priests will be showing that, yeah.
Did you... Robin Hood, the notices for Robin Hood are really kind of stinky. And that opens up next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't predict a Gladiator kind of... business.
No,
are people interested in Robin Hood? I don't know.
It goes back to what we're actually talking about with the horror movies. This is a very serious reimagining. I mean, to me, the quintessential Robin Hood is Errol Flynn, and I doubt it will be on that level. It will. There's actually, if in the 80s, I think it was, there's a British series called Robin Hood that was very, for its time, very gritty and more realistic, certainly more than the Costner film. But you remember when the Costner film came out? Remember Fox Television had the Patrick Bergen and Uma Thurman?
Yes.
And I actually thought that was far superior to the Kevin Costner film. I think this is somewhere in between those two, but this looks, Chris said it best last week, it's like more like Kingdom of Heaven than anything else.
Well, it looks like Gladiator 2. It looks like that's the movie that they're making.
Yeah.
Are you interested in it, Rick, at all?
I'm curious to see it because I really like Ridley Scott, but, you know, am I excited? No. No, I'm not. And it does look like Kingdom of Heaven. But we'll see.
Yeah, I didn't think that anyone would be interested in Sherlock Holmes. I mean, Sherlock Holmes, and apparently they were. Apparently they were. I don't know if they're interested in Sherlock Holmes or an action movie with Robert Downey Jr. I
think it's the latter, and, I mean, it is Robert Downey Jr. There's something about him, always about him. He has this charisma.
It doesn't matter what it is,
it's there. And watching him just in the interviews on the extras for Iron Man yesterday, it's just there. He really loves being a part. I think he also realizes that he's had this up and down seesaw career, and he's just
he's
aware of it. I mean, he knows that he's very lucky to be where he's at. He's been such in the public eye with that part of the tabloid part of his life. But since he's been back on, I would actually think it's really Mel Gibson giving him the part in the Singing Detective remake. And from that point on, he is just – and not before. I mean, everything he did before, I thought, for the most part, was excellent. But since the Singing Detective, and especially since Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang,
he's
been on fire.
Movie.
He is just
yeah. –
Even the soloist, which I know a lot of people don't like, his performance, though, you are...
He's good in it.
He's good.
Yeah, he's very good.
And he's... And there's a lot of... I was actually thinking about the... You know, they bring up the similarities of between him and the character he plays in Iron Man, Tony Stark. You know, you have the playboy lifestyle. You have the alcoholism, which is an important part of the comic book. But also, the famous father figure. You have the famous father figure in Iron Man, but also he is Robert Downey... senior's son, who a very occult director. So you have that. I mean, it's just like everything is going right for him right now.
Yeah, well, he's in a place in his life where that can happen, and he can maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, He's a guy that's been blessed with 10 chances in life, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
And now he's at a good place in his life. He seems to be. Speaking of Robert Downey Jr., Less Than Zero, the sequel has been written by Bret Easton Ellis. It's going to come out this summer.
Yeah, no, Imperial Bedrooms. I can't wait to see it.
With the audiobook read by Andrew McCarthy, I read.
Who's going to read? Wait, who's going to do the audiobook?
Andrew McCarthy, I think.
Andrew McCarthy.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
I wonder if he's going to blink a lot and, like he does with the movies when he reads the audiobook. All right, let's play a little game before we close up the segment. Looking at the sub. Oh, George Romero's Survival of the Dead. Jerry, are you going to want to see that at all?
I do want to see it, but the reviews have just been, they've really trashed that. I mean, this film has gotten trashed.
Big Shouldn't time. It be called, like, Beating a Dead Zombie at this point?
It should just be called My Paycheck is Coming to Me. Paycheck.
Yeah.
It should just be called Paycheck.
Paycheck, yeah, yeah. Wasn't that the John Woo movie, Paycheck?
Yeah, that, oh, God, let's not go there. Oh, God. Yeah. I love John Woo, and I love Philip K. Dick. I love Uma Thurman and that movie.
Never was a movie more aptly titled. Yeah. I don't get the Dead series. I guess... If I were Romero, I'd think, you know, maybe I want to do something else. It's been 40 years, and I know he has done other films.
I think this is the problem, is that, you know, at one sense you're excited to see him working with something like Land of the Dead, and even to a lesser extent with Diary of the Dead, but it is a... There does come a point, even like there are parts. I think I like the idea of Diary of the Dead better than the actual execution of it, but maybe it was wrong to even say that because I feel like you're encouraging him.
Do better next time. Yeah.
But not even. Yeah. I mean, it's not. I read actually what today was the first time I actually read what it was about, and I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me.
What is it about? Survival of the Dead.
It takes place, I think, on an island off the coast of Delaware. I didn't know there was an island. There's two rival families. There's two rival families, and one thinks the zombies should be wiped out, and the other one thinks they should be contained. So the problem, I think, with Romero is that the subtext actually became the text itself. And when that happened, that seems to be the big problem amongst a lot of fans, is that when the subtext actually became the story, well, there was nothing else really to say.
Yeah, why doesn't he just make a movie called Career of the Dead? I mean, that can be an autobiography. I shouldn't say that because they're trying to get us Romero, so I will promptly edit this section.
Yeah, you really should. But I know it's curious, but it is does seem like, and then as someone pointed out, he is kind of like Lucas that way. He is cannibalizing his own.
He's cannibalizing his own movie about cannibalism.
Yeah, really. I don't know how else to put it. But there's other things. He's good at other things. I mean, there's a whole host of Stephen King books he could have adapted and do very well right now.
It comes out the same day as Sex and the City 2. There has to be a tie-in somewhere there. I mean, that's marketing. They've got to do something with that.
Yeah,
I'd like to see George Romero's Sex and the City 2, actually. Okay. Looking at the summer movies, I'm going to name two movies. You tell me both which one that you'd be more likely to want to see and which one you think will be the bigger hit and the bigger bomb. Mm-hmm. You ready?
Yeah.
You ready for this little game, Rick? Okay.
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. Rick, Shrek Forever After or Toy Story 3?
Well, I think Toy Story 3 will be a bigger hit than Shrek Forever After, but I truly think they'll both do really well at the box office.
Right.
I think those movies right now are the family movies are.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the How to Train Your Dragon doing so well. So I think Toy Story 3 will be the bigger hit, but I don't know if this will be the last Shrek though, if it brings in money. But anyway,
Forever and Ever After will be the next installment. but do you think that, which one do you think would be better, will be a better film?
Well, I would imagine that Toy Story 3 will be a better film. I mean, the first two I just thought were really, really good. So, and I, you know, it's been a while. I think people are looking forward to it, and I think I'm sure there was some energy going into it on their end. So, I think Shrek 3. I'm sorry, Toy Story 3.
I know. Okay. I know how you feel. Okay, Jerry. The Karate Kid. Or the A-Team, Jerry?
Oh, I think the A-Team.
I agree.
I think, and here's the thing, the Karate Kid, I actually think is ingenious in its casting, especially with Jackie Chan as Mr. Miyagi and all that, but I'm just not. I mean, if it introduces people to the first film, if people go back and watch the first film, I think that's great, because I love the first film a lot. But I think the A-Team just has something going, it's a very tongue-in-cheek adaptation, the whole idea of Liam Neeson doing George Peppard and doing it so well in the trailer, at least, is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It's really, I mean, I don't know, I think it's Liam Neeson's movie, and I know Bradley Cooper did all this working out and everything, and it looks like they have a good cast, but it looks like they had a lot of fun with it. I think that's going to be the more popular of the two.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think people are going to be very curious about the Karate Kid. I don't doubt that. Although I've heard a lot of people just are against it because they love the original so much.
Yeah.
Okay, Rick. Night and Day, or The Last Airbender?
Oh, wow. I would imagine Night and Day will be a better movie, but I don't, between, the, you know, I don't know. It just depends on as to which one will make the most money. I don't know.
Well, I think it's
it depends
last
on
Airbender.
If, really,
you
think
The Last Airbender? Does it
yeah, it'll make more money?
Yeah, I think it's just because the kids, when they showed the teaser trailer, I think it was in front of Transformers last summer. Everyone was going ape shit. I was just like, wait a second, am I missing something?
It's a popular Nickelodeon thing.
Yeah,
right?
That's exactly what it is. I actually think that would be the better one, but I'm very curious to see Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz act opposite each other. I think there's something about that I'm very curious about.
Aren't they kicking around putting Last Airbender in 3D too? I mean, that's
it's going to be in 3D. It's going to be like it's their. I mean, even though it wasn't shot in 3D, they are...
Right, another one of those.
And this is going to be... A lot of people think this will be M. Night's comeback film, and he'll be able to do whatever he wants after this, to an extent.
Clearly he wants it to be his comeback film. That's why
he has to. And
picked up a well-known property.
It's not that the last film was so bad. If The Happening...
The Happening?
No, it's not. It is a bad film, but if that was the first film he made, and that came out before The Mist and War of the Worlds and all those movies, I actually think people would actually respond to it better. But because it comes after all these other films, and it is, dude, it's like he left the set and said, "You guys are fend for yourselves."
And it came after Lady in the Water too,
yeah.
Which was another. Yeah,
I think if it came before Lady in the Water, it might have actually had a chance. But I think the problem was they promoted, "Oh, it's his first R-rated film." And all that, and they were really, I think, you know, if you just focused on the script and you worked with everyone in the film, there's stuff there. I think what always bugged me, there's enough interesting things in the script, obviously, and if you would actually worked on it, you could have come up with a decent film. And what you have there is just really some embarrassing acting.
It's an embarrassing movie all around.
Yeah.
I mean, they're afraid of wind. They know danger is approaching when they see
like
the grass move.
It's like a retarded version of Day of the Triffids. I mean,
the thrilling part of the movie is watching the grass move. That's
yeah,
all
I mean,
have to
when
say.
When he talks to the plastic plant, I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. And he sounds like 50 Cent throughout the movie. That's what really scares me.
Right. Well, he has acted across from Heather Graham, so he has had experience having a conversation with a plastic plant. Okay, Jeff, that's terrible. Okay, Jerry, Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore, or Step Up 3D? No, I'm just kidding.
Step Up 3D.
I won't make you do that. Salt or The Expendables?
Oh, The Expendables.
I know that's the one you're looking forward to.
I know. No, Salt will work because people are curious about it because everyone likes Angelina Jolie, and everyone wants to see her do well. And it actually has a very good cast, and it's a good trailer. It depends. I mean, it's like I said the same thing about Wanted, though, and I liked Wanted. I'm not going to lie. I thought Wanted was a good movie, but, you know, can she carry a movie? And that's what we're going to see again. Can she actually...
That's true. Outside of Tomb Raider, has she really proven... I mean, she's an actress. She's capable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in terms of getting people to come see her carrying a movie.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, so I'm I'm very curious about it. It's a bad name for a movie, though, Salt.
Yes.
I mean, it's just
yeah,
a horrible name. They have to... But, yeah, The Expendables is the one, though. I mean... The problem with Expendables is it comes... I mean, basically, August 13th is the day that the two movies I really want to see the most come out, The Expendables and Scott Pilgrim. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so...
Okay. Let's do some more. Hang on.
You're really... This is like when we were running out of things to say.
Do you guys not find this fun? I find this fun.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's fun.
No. Okay. Rick. This is like a game show. I wish I had like a ticking clock. MacGruber or
Prince of Persia.
Okay, let's go with that. I don't even see Prince of Persia.
MacGruber. I don't know. I think MacGruber will. Honestly, MacGruber looks funny to me.
Yeah.
Isn't that directed by the guy in Hot Rod? He plays Kevin. I know you haven't seen Hot Rod, have you, Jamie?
No.
All right, let me look. All
right. He plays Kevin, Adam Sandberg's brother in Hot Rod. He's the director of MacGruber. I've heard that MacGruber looks... I've heard that in some of the screenings that it's pretty funny. So,
the Atlantic Monthly gave it the rave review. I mean, they said this is the funniest film, the funniest Saturday Night Live film since Wayne's World. I don't know about that, but they say it's the funniest action comedy since Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, well, I've heard the same thing. I've heard that it's really funny. So I think it'll probably be the better movie and make the most money. So. It sounds silly, but...
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean.
Jerry, Machete is coming out in September now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Labor Are
Day
you?
Weekend, right?
I am. I think it looks funny.
It looks
the trailer.
It's a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun. Come on. Looks like
yeah.
I mean, something you think...
I agree.
Okay, Machete or... Man, this is tough. Night of the Demons has a remake.
Really?
When is that? Is that coming out the same day?
The same month.
The same month. I'm going with Machete on this one. Although Night of the Demons has a loyal core following, but I'm going with Machete.
Would you go for Machete
yeah.
over between that and Jackass 3D? Would you still go with Machete?
Jackass 3D is they were serious about that? I thought that was just
yeah.
like a cool thing.
October 15th, yes.
Wow. Jesus Christ, October 15th. That's quick. That's coming up.
yeah.
You know what? I think Jackass 3 is gonna wipe that under the rug. I think it's a 3D. Come on, people will really respond to that. Oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. But yeah.
All right,
like
final.
Jackass films, they're funny, but 3D. We really need that in 3D. Oh God!
It's like that extra dare to watch, you know,
yeah.
to not close your eyes during it. And The Social Network opens the same day as the Let Me In, which is the remake of Let the Right One In.
Let the Right One In.
Yeah,
yes,
that was so good.
October 22nd, Rick.
October movie.
Paranormal Activity. Paranormal Activity 2 versus Saw 7. The same day.
I think Paranormal Activity 2 will do more money. I think the Saw series is, you know, running itself into the ground. But I think Paranormal Activity was such a huge hit that everybody will just be really curious. I mean, even if it makes half of what the mm-hmm. first one did, I think it'll do better than Saw 7.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You agree, Jerry?
I think he's right. Although, isn't Cary Elwes coming back for the Saw? I mean, not that.
Yeah, he is. He is, actually, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Wow,
I don't know if that would be enough of a driving force.
That'll bring the kids back in.
That will.
Let's go see the new Cary Elwes movie.
Still looking for true love.
I think though so it's going to be The Social Network against Let the Right, the American version of Let the Right One In.
Yeah, it's funny that that's such a wrong project to do a remake of that, and so it's ironic how they took out the right in the title.
So we got those two. Wow, that's already a different ballgame, because they moved a lot of movies that were going to come out that day have already been pushed back to the following year. So that should be interesting. I'm very curious. I am really curious about how Fincher and Sorkin are going to paint the Facebook movie. I'm really curious to see how that plays out.
It's going to be great, and it's going to be great because Fincher's working with a great writer in Sorkin. I mean, that makes me excited. Sorkin wrote the script for that, really? Did that just leave my mind?
Yeah, no, he did. I thought it was under the impression that it was, or at least he one of the writers on it. But yeah.
Oh wow! Yeah, that's exciting. Okay, this has been fun, guys.
This has been.
Yeah, it's actually been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
There's no reason whatsoever to be nervous, Ray.
Yeah, really. I mean, if I'm doing this, you should definitely not be nervous.
You do a great job. I mean, you guys obviously have been doing it for a little while, but you express yourselves great. I get all
Thank
nervous
you.
Still.
No, you did great. So
you
will come back. You're incredible, Rick. You're amazing. You're my best ever. So come back. You will definitely come back. LamppostLaneMovie.com is the website we want our listeners to go to.
It's a little production diary. That's it. So, because we're still working on the movie, but anyway,
and I'll be able to see the movie soon in whatever form it's in.
Yeah, it's still rough, but you know that. So yeah, you'll see it because I wanted you to do some voiceover work for us.
Oh, cool.
In the very least. So
really.
Yeah.
I can put on my sexy voice. Oh, great. All right. Well, thank you for letting me speak to your class. You know how much I love children.
Oh no, thank you. Yeah, thanks for doing it. And you did an awesome job, and I know they're excited. So.
Yes, the children. The children. Bring me the children, Richard. Bring me the children. They amuse me.
They amuse me.
Anyway. All right.
Hey, thanks again, guys.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
I'll talk to you later on. Bye-bye.
Okay.
All right. It's my good buddy, Rick. It's great to have him on the show. Awesome.
Oh, it was awesome. That was great. That was a wonderful idea.
Let's talk about some Gene Hackman highlights after we play a little film scoreage.
All right. Sounds good to me.
This will be our mystery movie score of the week.
Oh,
how
my
about
God.
That? All right. I've just got so many of them downloaded here. Why don't we play two tonight? One now and one at the close of the show. So let's see how quick people are. This is pretty easy. Let's see how quick people are in the chat room guessing what this score is.
Thank you.
Okay, so Indiana, what does Temple of Doom have to do with Gene Hackman?
Nothing at all.
No, it's a beautiful it's a beautiful score. Don't get me wrong.
And so is Gene Hackman.
Gene Hackman is. You know, my brother worked with Gene Hackman.
Really?
You know, he did voiceover work for advertising. And he did voiceover work with him and with Donald Sutherland.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, and you know, it's really funny because he said, you know, Jerry, you know, should I bring up Eureka? I'm like, no, don't bring up Eureka. Sure enough, his wife brings up Eureka when they're there, and oh God, you know, Gene was so sick while they were making Eureka and everything. It's like, oh dear. No, but I thought you would play the music to March or Die, to be honest. But okay, I mean,
what is that?
March or Die was a movie he made. I remember we watched this. I think it was 1981. It was on NBC. But it was a movie about the French Foreign Legion, I believe. And you know, and it was a, you know, it's not considered a great film, but I just remember watching it as a kid a lot of times. It always come on television. And,
right.
You know, but even let's say this about Hackman. Even in some of the lesser films, he always stood out. I mean,
he's the first to admit there's a lot of lesser films.
Oh, he'd be the first. He said what Michael Caine used to always say. He's a working actor.
Right.
You know, actually both of them would, you know, especially with Michael Caine with Jaws of Revenge or something, I'm a working actor, guys, all right? Just leave me alone.
Yeah, and, you know, the reason why I want to do this, we've done in-depth tributes to actors before, but we haven't really talked about some of the other greats from the period that we normally pay tribute to.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of actors, I wanted to talk about Hackman and Hoffman and De Niro and Duvall this month, kind of like just something a lot more informal than we normally do with our tribute shows, just inviting callers in to talk about their favorite works of these great actors. And it's also a generational thing, too, because just like we talk about directors, which directors are picking up the baton from these greats of the 70s on, same with actors. I mean, Hackman hasn't made a movie in, you know, 6-7 years since Welcome to Mooseport.
Which they thought at the time would be, because of Ray Romano, a lot
right.
of people thought would be a really big hit, and you're watching it, you're like, you know, this is really just an extended sitcom pilot almost. But having said that about Hackman, I have to say something. He's missed, though. Missed in a sense that I think you might agree with this, you might disagree with this, but he's missed when you watch something like Superman Returns. And as much as we all like Kevin Spacey, he doesn't handle – you really realize how
right.
instrumental Hackman is to those first two Superman movies. And I love those movies. They're great movies. But you realize what a vital part he is to those films.
I think that's a great description, vital. I mean, he seems so vital in that movie. And he's the tone of his performance in those movies is just right.
Yeah, sinisterly funny. He's
right.
But it's something that Kevin Spacey misses the mark. His Lex Luthor is much more mean-spirited than Hackman's, and it's just and let's be honest, I don't understand why they didn't get Richard Donner to direct it, why they didn't get Hackman to come back, because essentially it's like Superman 3 in many ways. It's a Superman 3 everyone wanted to see for some reason, and it's not that, but you realize that. You also realize that in 2001, Hackman gave two incredible back-to-back performances, Heist and The Royal Tenenbaums. You could not ask for two really incredible and more diverse performances than those.
Right.
And also the other thing, though, and speaking of next week's tribute, is The Runaway Jury. You finally get Hoffman and Hackman, and it's just, I think it's one or two scenes, but in that movie, but it's something a lot of people have been waiting for a long time.
And I'd even go further with 2001, because somebody posted it on your Facebook announcement of the show, Heartbreakers, which was also from that year. That's a brilliant comedic performance.
Yeah,
he's the highlight of that movie.
Oh, without a doubt. Molly Selassie posted that, he is very funny. He's like we said, even in the lesser films, there's something about him that stands out.
There are movies of his. I mean, he is the first one to admit, maybe out of the you know, just under 100 credits to his name, he's got maybe at best a dozen that he thinks are great films. Mm-hmm. But in the films that he is in, you wish that the movies were better so they could match him. Like the ones that don't quite work, like The Chamber. Mm-hmm. I think there is gold in that performance in The Chamber. The movie and his co-star are not up to par with him.
You're right.
I wish that the movie was worthy of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And I was reading and I have not seen Another Woman in a very long time, but I was reading Pauline Kael's review today, and singles him out as one of the best things about the movie.
Outside of Vicky Cristina, it's my favorite Woody Allen movie, mm-hmm. Another Woman.
Yeah, no, it's a great film, and I like that Pauline Kael really singles his performance out in that film. I don't think she's crazy about the film, but she really said that he is like just spot on in that.
So when I say Gene Hackman, and we'll take callers right after we express our own favorites.
Mm-hmm.
What performance comes to mind?
Well, outside of Lex Luthor and everything, The French Connection, obviously, The Conversation, these are all givens. But it really, you know, taking into account all those films that we just mentioned, it's going back in my 30s, and thanks to something like Netflix and being able to watch Night Moves, Scarecrow, and Prime Cut. And those are three very important films with him, and three films which I like a lot. Prime Cut, I obviously like because it's Lee Marvin, and I like Lee Marvin a lot. But his performance is excellent in that film. Prime Cut is actually a film I learned about in high school, of all places. But you know, it wasn't something that you would find at the video store, or even it didn't play on TV that much. So when it finally became available on DVD, I was very excited to see it. Night Moves, I think, is an incredible performance by him, and Scarecrow, that's really one of the lost classics of the 70s, as we talked about a couple of years ago when we spoke to the director and on the Al Pacino tribute show.
Yeah, Shensburg.
Magnificent performance. That is a classic 70s film.
It really is. And people don't talk about it enough. Scarecrow is amazing to me. I love Scarecrow. I think that belongs on his crowning achievement list, as does he, actually. In terms of his own performances, and I think The Conversation, that would be my second one. It's one of my favorite. I mean, obviously the Godfather movies are perfect, one and two,
right.
But The Conversation is like my favorite Coppola movie. As a small character study, you can't beat Conversation for me.
That's true.
Okay, let's take a call. This might be Dean at 676 area code. Go ahead.
That laugh gives it away.
That was my laugh. Oh, is this Dean? All right. If this is Dean, your phone reception is really bad.
Worse
we can't
than mine.
We can't hear you. If you could like stand on your head or some way to get better reception, then give us a call back. Crimson Tide is another one, and it's actually one of my favorite Bruckheimer.
Mm-hmm.
Simpson Productions, actually, because it's probably is my favorite because it's all about character and it's an action movie thriller that gets its thrills and action from the volatility between these two people.
Right, absolutely.
And just
right.
two actors that have the same kind of strength too, this very relaxed behavioral mm-hmm. quality. You feel comfortable with them both right away.
Yes.
There's a look, and it's my favorite look Gene Hackman's ever given on film, and it's in Crimson Tide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when they're talking in the hallway, and Denzel Washington says to him, "You know, I think that the people are a little on edge, and they need to relax." And Gene Hackman says, "Well, you certainly seem to have the pulse of the men." And he gives him a look of such contempt.
Yeah.
It is palpable when he says that line.
Yeah, no, you're right. Another film, and obviously the obvious one is Unforgiven.
Yes.
He's very good in. Even when he plays the president, I'm not a big fan of Absolute Power. I think it's better than the book. I wasn't fond of the book. Everyone raved about the book. But he's very good in that. I mean, it's just he has a screen presence that goes a long way. Enemy of the State is another one that I think he's – without him, that you don't have anything to work with, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could go on and on, but I think that's what it is. He is an actor's actor. Let's go back even long before that. Let's go back to Bonnie and Clyde and especially Young Frankenstein. That
right.
comedic turn in Young Frankenstein is classic.
Absolutely. And unexpected, too. I mean, nobody expected to see, at that period, nobody expected to see Gene Hackman in a comedy.
Right. Mm-hmm. True. Very true.
Yeah. Here he is.
A visitor is all I ask. A temporary companion to help me pass a few short hours in my lonely life. Thank you, Floyd. Thank you. Mm. Oh, don't speak. Don't say a word. Oh, my joy and my prize from heaven. Oh, you must have been the tallest one in your class. My name is Harold, and I live here all alone. What is your name?
Mm.
I didn't get that.
Mm.
No. Oh, forgive me. I didn't realize you were mute. You see how heaven plans. Me, a poor blind man, and you, a mute. An incredibly big mute.
An incredibly
classic,
big
classic, man. That whole
let's take a call. all right, Dean, give us 1 second. We have another caller on the line. It's not a recognizable number. It must be international or a calling card number.
Well, let me ask you about some others, though.
Hang on, we're taking a caller.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Caller, you're on the line.
Hi. I was actually just calling to say hello, because I don't actually know a great deal about film and stuff. My name's Godiva X.
Oh,
hi.
It is so nice to hear your voice after all these months. Very good.
Yeah,
Thank you so much for your support for all the shows and everything. So we really
appreciate
it.
You're welcome. I'm actually learning a lot.
Great.
So yeah, cool.
Well, thank you for calling in. Do you have any...
Now, what time is it where you are? It must be much later than it is for us.
It's actually 25 minutes past 12.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. So ours will be the last voices you hear before you go to sleep.
Yeah, you will.
I hope we can put you to sleep.
I'm very good at that.
Oh,
I can put anyone to sleep.
Do you have any thoughts on Gene Hackman?
Do you know what? I'm actually really, really scared. And
you're really
scared. Really, really shaking. This is really nerve wracking.
No, please.
Don't be nervous.
Don't do anything that's going to make you, that's going to get create. You know, no stress. The whole motto of the show is we don't want to create any stress.
Oh, bless you both. I'll phone in again, actually, at some point.
Okay.
I know a bit more about the subject you're actually talking about.
Well, we welcome you to call in any time.
Yeah, any time, and we really appreciate it. And like I said, we appreciate your support. You've been a great supporter of the show and on the other shows that I do, and I really appreciate it.
So,
okay.
tell me, before you go, tell me what some of your favorite movies are.
Well, I like sort of vampire films, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, you know, The Lost Boys, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, they're good stuff.
Because I'm ever so slightly gothic and
no, of course.
Weird in that way.
No.
But, you know, I would say I like sort of old romantic films like Brief Encounter.
That's the quintessential. Brief Encounter is really that's the quintessential film. That's what all other films are based on in that subgenre.
Yeah. I've watched it so many times, and it is absolutely heartbreaking, but, you know, it's so compelling as well. You know, even while you sort of sat there, and, you know, it's just so moving. I absolutely adore that film.
Yeah.
No, it is, yeah.
Well, it's great to have a female voice on the show every once in a while.
It's always good. On this show, it's always good to have a female voice. Always.
Yeah. I try to have Jerry change the tone of his voice occasionally.
I can do it, too. You got to just give it some time, though. I mean...
Oh, bless you. Do you know what film always makes me cry, though, is Gone with the Wind, because you just think, oh, you stupid girl, why did you not realize how you felt, you know, when you had the chance? you know, that is the one film where, and, you know, it's that line, tomorrow is another day, you know, that is so true, but, you know, oh, God, it's so hot.
It's what I'm living with right now.
Yeah.
No, where she's running through the fog, it takes her so long to realize
what's there right in front of her eyes.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and then you sort of find yourself thinking, you know, is she going to get him? Is she going to win him back? And then, of course, there was that awful sequel.
Timothy Dalton. Joanne Wally Kilmer was the.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Godiva, you're a dear for calling in and supporting our show.
Yes, you are. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm completely changing the subject.
No, that's all right. That's okay.
We appreciate you very much, and hope that you call back again.
I will, definitely.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Night.
Okay, Dean?
Yes?
Okay, we can hear you now, buddy.
I know. I've got AT&T phones, so I've got to, like, here in Brooklyn, I actually have to stick my head out of the window to get a reception. It's really terrible, but...
Wow, I'm sorry you got to go through that to do our show, but
yeah, really. Okay, so you posted a lot of films that a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know with Gene Hackman on the other yesterday. So why don't you go through some of those?
Let me try and remember some of them. One of them was Under Fire, which is
That's a good one.
A really terrific. Roger Spottiswood movie from, I think, 1983.
Another one that Pauline Kael raved about, by the way.
Yeah, I was reading those today.
You know, the early 80s was a really interesting time for little movies that not a lot of people went to go see, and it was kind of like a transitory time for movies, because once 1984 rolled in, you know, it was kind of that was basically the end of the 70s era. I always like to say the last movie of the 70s was The Right Stuff. But
that's very true.
Under Fire is a really terrific movie with Nick Nolte as a wartime photographer in El Salvador or Nicaragua?
No, I think it was El Salvador because that was the bigger – at that time, that was the bigger because you had the death squads and everything – and that was the bigger story. It wasn't until really 85 and 86 that Nicaragua becomes a big thing.
Right. It's been a little while since I've seen it, but I think that's a really great performance by Hackman. Of course, Night Moves is probably the best, least known performance by Hackman, I think. I think that movie is extraordinary, and what a cast. I mean, you know, everybody's in that movie, James Woods and Melanie Griffith as a young kid, and I think that movie is extraordinary. Like one of the great endings in movies ever. And he's just so. I think that's a perfect companion piece with what I think is his best performance, which is I agree with Julie that it's The Conversation. Both of those characters have a similar sense of like being beaten down by life, you know, finding solace only in the work.
Not letting anyone in.
Right.
In Conversation, that's so beautifully written that his job just completely emphasizes who he is as a person.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I love, you know what I love in Conversation? I think this was Hackman's choice, too, this kind of points out the kind of actor that Hackman is when he's at his best and really engaged in the work, is that choice he had of wearing that raincoat, that sort of sheer raincoat.
Yes.
There was just something about that was just... so perfect. I've never seen anything like it in a movie ever. You know, that raincoat is just, you know, iconic almost. But that's just an extraordinary movie. Let's see, what else did I bring up? Twice in a Lifetime is something that a lot of people haven't seen. I think it's directed by Bud Yorkin.
I haven't heard in a long time.
Yeah, he was the one of the producers of All in the Family and worked a lot with Norman Lear and a lot of movies before Norman Lear was a TV person.
Yeah, remember he directed the movie with the Inspector Clouseau with Alan Arkin that.
Oh, right.
You remember
which
he
never
seen nowhere.
That.
Yeah,
that, I've never seen that.
Yeah.
But Twice in a Lifetime, pretty good movie. Kind of interesting to see see Hackman playing this character that's just sort of a normal everyman kind of character, which is something that he doesn't play often, you know.
He has that quality, but you're right. I mean, he came onto the scene really in a big way with French Connection. He was very nervous about playing that part, but so he came on as this gruff authoritative guy that was the character, and then he went on for Scarecrow, and that was another very particular character in that category too. So the everyman characters are few and far between, but I find that even in the lesser movies, the one that you mentioned, something like Loose Cannons, which was a movie I've seen many times because of Gene Hackman, because I'm not a big fan of, certainly not Dan Aykroyd.
Did Dan Aykroyd like come over your house and clog up the toilet or something?
I just have a thing about Dan Aykroyd.
I know.
I will watch
that
movie
like
for Gene Hackman.
You just don't like the look of Dan Aykroyd's mug or something? You just don't like he's
Dan Aykroyd.
He is annoyingly doughy to me. I don't know how else to say it.
I think that is a brave thing to say. See, I'm sorry that you think that I'm always trying to get under your skin because I think you're terrific. But I think that's an incredibly brave thing to say. I would like to see more film critics or film commentators just come out and say, I just don't like the guy.
It doesn't even speak about him necessarily. Yeah, it's just my reaction to him. Narrow Margin is another one, the Peter Hyams movie.
The Package is a good one, a good thriller from like the late
80s. Is that the Tommy Lee Jones thing that he did? Right?
That was interesting.
That was good. And Get Shorty. You can't leave out Get Shorty. He's incredible.
He's great. The teeth and that. And I heard stories about Get Shorty. I heard stories about his reaction to Get Shorty. He told Barry Sonnenfeld, he said, I'm thinking of growing a goatee for this part. And Barry Sonnenfeld said, well, try it. And if it doesn't work, we'll just cut it off. And he said, screw that. I'm not going to go through the trouble of growing a goatee if we're not going to use it. And then Sonnenfeld said that he's a very strict, like, family guy, that he only agreed to work, like, two nights during the shoot, and he had to be off by 6. Whenever he worked. That was in his contract. Also something interesting is he turned down Pearl Harbor because he's married to a Japanese-American woman.
Yeah.
And he was afraid that she would find it offensive. So he was offered the Roosevelt role for Pearl Harbor.
Do you think that Hackman is, like, unofficially retired or something?
He is retired. He is officially.
He did say he's not going to make any more movies?
He says he's not interested in it. He's having a good time writing now.
Writing
novels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
Which is, a loss to us all. But the good news is, I mean, he's got so many credits, so many films. It's not like he retired after, half a dozen. Mississippi Burning, which he's astounding in. That's one of his, like, I think, top 5 or 6 astounding
performances. That's a really good movie. And like I said, another movie I like him in, and a lot of people don't like this movie, but I like it, is Twilight. Twilight with the vampires, the Twilight with Paul Newman.
The Robert Bittman.
I can't believe I have to
disagree. And isn't James Garner in that?
Garner and Reese Witherspoon.
What a great movie that was.
That was a real
underrated
movie. Just incredible film.
It was an adult film. I mean, it was like a movie for adults.
At
a time when they still don't really make them.
Came out the same day. Now,
one in 20 movies.
U.S. Marshals and The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a good weekend.
Yeah. Here's another one. Hang on real quick, Dean.
Uh-huh.
Here's another one that people are very fond of. When it comes to Gene Hackman.
all over this before. Their top player is Boyle, number 15. He averages about 20 points a game. Buddy, you got to stick right with him. No inside penetration. Shut down those passing lanes. And you got to play tough off those boards. Negate their height advantage.
Hickory is time to set the floor.
I'll get free.
Okay. We're way past big speech time. I want to thank you for the last few months. It's been very special for me. Anybody have anything they want to say?
Yeah. Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
I want to win for my dad. Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Thank you.
With God of Heaven, it is all one. To deliver with a great multitude or a small company. For the victory of battle standeth not in the multitude of hosts, but strength cometh from heaven.
And David put his hand in the bag and took out a stone and slung it. And it struck the Philistine on the head, and he fell to the ground.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah, that's one of those sports movies. I mean, that's one of the top sports movies.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
That male thing. I mean, like the movies that make strong men cry. You know, not like me that cries at everything, but like, and people will choke up with that. I love you guys. You know, and
even the last line in the movie, because it comes back as you know, when they're closing in on the team photo at the end, at the very last shot of the movie. So,
it's incredible.
It really is.
And Paul and Rich, even Dennis Hopper is in that performance in that too. I mean, it's perfect. Go ahead, Dean.
I always wondered what happened to that director, David Anspaugh, because I think he did Rudy, and didn't he do Rudy? And then I haven't heard much about him since, you know. But he did a lot of great television, you know, in the 80s and early 90s, too. But
Rudy has a big, like, following, I noticed.
Huge cult.
I mean, it's got a huge following from people I would never expect, but you hear people, and they love that film. And more power to them. It's a great film. I mean,
yeah, it is. It is really good. Not as good as Hoosiers. That's a great score. Score for Hoosiers is a pretty good score.
I can hum it later if you want.
Please do. That would be.
Wait, are you going to do that on Wednesday night, Jamie?
Dun 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 dun. I see. I can do it.
That's really good.
Thank you.
Another Hackman film though that I like, and it's The Firm.
Yes.
And he's very good in that too.
Another villainous kind of character that. But you have such sympathy for him, you know, he's not all the way there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I was going to bring up a film that's earlier in his career that probably a lot of people still have seen is a movie that he doesn't particularly like, but I still like it, and it also has a huge cult, and that is The Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, yeah, I was going to bring that up. I mean, it wasn't for him, they would never have gotten out.
That's right.
That's true.
It is a really compelling performance. I mean, I think that moment, for those people who haven't seen Poseidon's Adventure, it was a bit of a pleasure here. But the moment after...
Hey, Dean, stick your head out the window again. You're breaking up.
Yeah, you're breaking up.
That moment that Shelley Winters passes away in the movie is, and his reaction to that is just amazing. I think that's an amazing.
It's something to remake, and no one expected anything from the remake, you know, to be anything worthwhile. But it's something the remake doesn't understand about the about those old Irwin Allen films, is that. You had really grade A actors delivering really cheesy dialogue and everything, but they did it and they brought such class to it.
They were really like the Bruckheimer of their time, because if you think about Bruckheimer and his particular gift is casting spectacular caliber actors in action stuff.
Yeah, and he did it very well for a while. He did that very well.
He's definitely learned something from Irwin Allen. Although I think that only Poseidon Adventure really comes forth in all those disaster movies from the 70s.
You don't think The Towering Inferno, when O.J. Simpson rescues Fred Astaire's cat at the end? Come on, you weren't moved by that? No,
man,
I'll never forget. Watch that.
Yeah, right. Oh, man.
The O.J. trial. The O.J. trial. That would be an Irwin Allen disaster flick.
That would be right there. But you know, I'll never forget. When that whole thing of the trial was going on that summer on the Towering Inferno was on, O.J. Simpson shows up at the end of the movie with Fred Astaire's cat. I was like, oh, my God, there's no way. I was like, there's no way he could kill him. Look, he's rescuing Fred Astaire's cat.
Just saying that sentence alone just shows you how campy those movies are.
Oh,
like,
no,
wonderfully
yeah.
campy.
Yeah.
Yes. But I still think that Poseidon Adventure transcends the campiness and actually is a really, really good movie that's really, really exciting. I don't like the setup scenes very much, but I do like it. Once the disaster hits, I think it's a nearly perfect movie.
Let's talk a little bit about The Birdcage. I mean, a good comedic performance in The Birdcage.
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the special parts of that movie to me.
Mm-hmm.
The straight-laced
he's
Republican.
So good in that.
Who thinks that the Pope is too radical? he is wonderful.
That film is important too, because that was, you know, like we were talking about earlier in the first half of the show about the remake of Let's Write One In, and it's only going to be like 2 years. You had this remake of a very famous French comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And it had been well over a decade, I think 12 years actually, maybe 12 or 15 years. And
La Cage aux Folles,
right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And it was the right time, you know, you introduced a whole new generation to the original, but you also had a remake that works on its own merit.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right. And another interesting thing about Hackman, and we've spoken to it, it was a trivia question a few months back on the show. In the early 90s, late 80s, he was attached to star in and direct Silence of the Lambs, Gene Hackman.
Really?
And he chose not to do it because it was too violent.
Mm-hmm.
So it was ironic when he was offered Unforgiven, he was afraid of the same thing. He didn't want to be associated with something that promoted violence like that. And so Clint Eastwood said, you know, this is the message of the film is, if anything, anti-violence.
Yeah.
And so he got that. And his performance in that... You can see it being played as the mustache-twirling, like, corrupt sheriff. He plays it quiet. I mean, his menace in that movie is quiet, is in his silence. When he's whipping Morgan Freeman and he says, you know, I'm not gonna be ginger with you like I was before. I'm going to hurt you bad if you don't tell me what I want to know.
Right.
But he says it, like, very almost whispering to him, and it's so much more menacing.
Yeah.
For the fact that he does that.
And, you know, what's interesting about that movie, too, is that I think that Hackman kind of centers in on the desire for that character to have a normal home life. You know, I mean, him building the house and wanting a future that's free from the violence. And I think that, you know, I think he looks at that, he plays the character as if the violence is abhorrent to him in a way, because he really wants the town to be free of violence, and that's the only reason he resorts to it. So when the final moment comes for him in the movie, when he says, "I don't deserve this, I was building a house," which is
right.
an incredible moment, you really, that's when you really forget that he was the villain and almost see him as a victim at that moment, which is the brilliance of that performance. So.
In something like Target, I mean, the Arthur Penn thing,
mm-hmm.
you can't imagine following that movie with as much interest without Hackman's presence.
No.
I mean, it is a B movie, but with him in it,
yeah.
with him in it, I mean, you're with it. I mean, he's why you're watching it, really. That preposterous Matt Dillon line for that movie. 48 hours? She's been missing 48 hours? Say it right, Dad. That's 2 days!
That's funny. We have talked about The Quick and the Dead.
Yeah.
That's another one. That's a movie that's grown on me. The first time I saw it, I wasn't crazy about it. And then people said, oh, you should really go back and watch it. And it's Sam Raimi. And it does get better the more times I watch it. But at first, I got to be honest, it didn't really blow me away. But, no, he's good. I mean, it's Hackman. He's good. I mean.
Yeah.
I like that movie. I like it tremendously. I think it's an incredibly fun movie. And,
oh, yeah. No, it is.
And the cast
absolutely
is
right.
terrific. And the cast is, like, right down to, like, the smallest roles, the cast is perfect. And,
mm-hmm.
and
no,
I
it's
like
thrown on me.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. yeah. I think that's a good movie.
So there's a lot of movies and a lot of movies to be discovered, but the truly great performances, I think, and Heist, God, I love to hear him recite Mammoth's dialogue in Heist.
Yeah.
That's the special joy in that. And Mammoth said that Hackman's the best actor he's ever worked with.
Mm.
I think you
really?
Could put...
Wow.
Yeah. And Hackman was interviewed, I saw an interview with him, and they said, what are your favorite moments in film? And he named two. And one of them was Bite the Bullet, which was a Western he did in the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
With Candace Bergen.
That's
one of the movies
yeah,
I mentioned.
Yeah. That is.
And
yeah,
he's on a horse, and he gives a little monologue that turns emotional. And there's also a movie called Class Action. And it wasn't...
Film.
Yeah. And it wasn't for the movie itself. It was for a moment in the kitchen where he's talking to his daughter after the mother has died.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a moment that happened where he started to get emotional. It was real life, unplanned, that seeped its way into that performance.
Right.
Mm.
And that's part of one of his favorite moments in movies,
mm-hmm.
too.
That's interesting. So he likes those moments that kind of kept... took him by surprise in a way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've heard stories about Hackman. Hackman is a very particular kind of movie actor that, say, for instance, does not translate to the stage. Because
right.
I've heard that he did stage work. He did Death and the Maiden maybe 10 years ago with
mm-hmm.
Dreyfuss and Glenn Close. And he was the one that didn't come across because there's such a minimalism, there's such a comfort there on camera, and it doesn't translate on stage.
Well, he likes a good whisper, you know. I think he likes a good low tone and a good sort of whispery kind of delivery sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely wouldn't translate on stage for sure.
So, if you were to choose top performance, like a single Time Vault performance by Hackman, what would it be, Jerry?
Oh, I mean, God, it's a toss-up between The Conversation and The French Connection, but I can't rule out The Royal Tenenbaums. It's just such
yeah.
That's a game-changer at the end. And, I mean, we've always known he's funny, but
mm-hmm.
that performance is, I mean, masterful. I mean, I would have given him the Academy Award right there for that.
He was insane he wasn't nominated for the Academy
yeah.
Award for that, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, he's so... I mean, they're just... I mean, not even the funny moments. It's just there's a level of emotion... even when people aren't saying anything in that film, especially towards the end, that he's very good.
Yeah.
And it's just something. It's just a really good performance, a really good film. But that's a one, but I'm sort of like torn between the conversation. I agree with Jamie. The conversation is really the quintessential Hackman performance.
I think so too. I mean, that would be my choice.
That would be definitely my choice. That would be the one that would go in.
Full Moon and Blue Water would be a close second. Or maybe Two of a Kind.
Two of a Kind. All Night
Superman
Long.
Superman 4, Quest for Peace.
All Night Long is you'd be surprised. There's a movie called All Night Long that he did in the early 80s.
That's a good movie.
With
I like
Barbara
that
Streisand.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
never been released on DVD, but that's, you know, he's got so many movies that haven't been ever released on DVD, but, you know, there'll still be, like you said, there'll be a lot of Gene Hackman to be discovered by people for a long time.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Hey, Dean, before we close off the show tonight, do you have a favorite film score since our Wednesday night show is all about film scores?
You know, on my blog, I did a list of my 150 favorite film scores, and the best film score to me is still The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
Just all the way through, you can actually sit and listen to the whole thing. It's almost like a concept album, almost, or a concept record. So I'd go with that, of course, Psycho, and I guess my favorite obscure, I've got two favorite obscure scores that I'd like to tout. One is for a movie from 1979 called A Little Romance.
Laurence Olivier, Diane Lane movie.
Yeah, exactly. And Georges de la Rue won an Oscar for it, and I think that's a beautiful score. It quotes a little bit from Bach a little bit sometimes, but it's really a diverse, nice little score. And then I'm a really huge fan of this score from Francis Ford Coppola's Rumblefish Stuart Copeland.
We'll be playing the score for some score for the conversation. Which is another great Coppola movie score.
David Shire.
Yeah, and we'll be playing some Morricone as well. So, Dean, tune back in Wednesday night because we're going to play have fun with film scores. That should be the name of the show, Fun with Film Scores.
That's a good
title, yeah. Yeah, it is. All right, guys. Well, I will definitely be in on Wednesday night.
All right, buddy. Thank you, man.
All right,
see you later.
And thank you, Jerry. This has been a fun show.
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. It's been a great show. It's a very, very good show.
And it'll be a fun show Wednesday night. I hope everyone can join us again.
Yeah, definitely.
By request by James in the chat room. I'm going to pretend like he requested it. We're going to close off with a 1941 theme.
Oh, cool. I like the 1941 theme.
Love it. Love it.
It's a great score. I love the score. I actually like some of the scenes. I do like that movie. I enjoy that movie,
Mm-hmm. I hear this, and it makes me want to conquer Poland. So,
great. Oh, our Polish fans will hate us now.
Yeah, anyway. All right, buddy. I'll see you Wednesday night. Send me some MP3s, man.
I will. All right.
All right, buddy. Good night.
All right, good night.